Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Nutcracker Syndrome podcast. We're in episode 6, and in this episode, I want to talk about the renal Hiler block procedure. So, last episode 5, we talked about the venogram, went a little more in depth on that, on my lived experience and what that was like. So, again, drop some comments if yours was a little different, or head on over to the Facebook Nutcracker page where there's more information there for you so you can get a better glimpse into not just my lived experience. So the renal Hiler block. This one is going to be a fun episode because there's a major subjective nature to the renal Hiler block. So before we jump into that, though, I want to talk about what is the renal Hiler block if you're curious about that. So it is a procedure that involves injecting a local anesthetic into the nerves and blood vessels around the renal hilum. This the area where the blood vessels in the ureter, they enter and they exit the kidney. So the thought behind this is that when they put an anesthetic, so they put this numbing agent in that area, that if your symptoms resolve, that the surgeons have a pretty good understanding that yes, your kidney is what is the issue here. So us moving this kidney, so it almost mimics as if the kidney has been moved. So if we move this kidney, it will address the problem. So you're wanting to have a positive test, meaning that when you go in, they'll ask you your pain scale prior to doing the local anesthetic, and then they'll ask it after. Now, there's some things I'll go into more detail about that. And you're supposed to keep a 24-hour pain scale log for the next 24 hours. The goal, and there's kind of like a moving target here as far as percentage goes. The goal is that you get at least, for some surgeons, and please call and ask them, be like, what is the outcome that you need from the renal Hiler block procedure to consider it a quote unquote positive test? Some need to see a 50% reduction in symptoms over 50% of the time, so over 12 hours. Some are okay if you have a 5 to 6 hour window of pain relief, others are not. So it's a little bit of a moving target. The renal Hiler block procedure is annoying to me, if I'm being extremely honest, in a lot of ways, because I feel like at the end of the day, it is a subjective measure that you are using, and I'm a researcher, okay? So if I were to use a subjective measure in a research study, the validity and the reliability are thrown out the window. So I'll go into a little bit more detail about that. Again, these are my opinions. I do understand the concept of the renal Hiler block. I had it done. I was pursuing Dr. Zendejas in Salt Lake City at the time. He requires this procedure in order to, like, you have to have it done prior to even have him accept you for an initial consult. So Dr. Foley and Dr. Pashak do not necessarily require this. I still went and got it done because I thought, you know what? I want to leave no stone unturned. If this is going to make insurance happy, cool. And if I end up having to go with Dr. Zendejas, I want to go ahead and have this checked off my box. So, how I received that referral. So you can't, to my understanding, you can't just walk up into a hospital and request a renal Hiler block. My interventional radiologist and their team referred me to another place in Denver, so another kind of interventional radiologist team, to have that procedure done. So it was done at a hospital. That was something that I think I was not expecting. It was very much like a surgery day. So just think about when you walk in, they take you back to pre-op, they're prepping you, they put you in a gown, they give you a hairnet, the whole thing. So I wasn't expecting that. I kind of thought it was going to be a little bit more of a lax procedure, almost like an in-office situation. But when I realized, oh, the hospital was calling, it was the surgery scheduling team calling me. So, just so you're aware of that, that it's not just like walk into somebody's office and they'll poke a little needle into that area. So that's what the renal Hiler block is. That is how you can get a referral. So request that from your interventional radiologist. I will say this, I had some The renal hilar block is kind of this, like when they call the surgery schedule team called me, there was a lot of issues on like, what are we scheduling you for? So be prepared for that as well. Because if you think about it, it's not really like they didn't put me under a local anesthetic. They did give me a nice little cocktail of fentanyl and an anti-anxiety med, Versed. And that was fun. That was a nice little adventure. But they don't put you under. So the surgery scheduling team, I had a very, and I've actually heard from other people, maybe it was just this hospital, maybe it's just the interventional radiologist I see, that there was some things kind of lost in the crosshairs of getting this scheduled, getting the referral sent over, them receiving the referral. So that was annoying. Even more of a reason why it's important to follow up. Put it on your calendar, follow up with this doctor. I know sometimes doctors, when it comes to referrals, will say, wait 24 to 48 hours. I don't do that. I don't do that. Maybe a doctor's listening to this and you're annoyed by me saying that. I'll be honest with you, I don't really care. Because the moment that I know that referral's in, I will gently and very kindly call the front desk and say, hey, I know you give it 24, 48 hours. I just wanted to see maybe A, did this come through? And B, in the meantime, for us waiting on this referral to come in, is there anything you need from me that I can go ahead and start gathering? So some of those things on referrals, a little bit of a side quest conversation there. What I want to do is talk about what to expect. So again, like I said, I'm hoping this podcast can help kind of set the mental space for you. This is also just my lived experience. Maybe where you're at, some people listening to this could say, well, I had the renal hilar block and it wasn't in a hospital. It wasn't as formalized as what you're saying. My understanding is it likely will be just because there's a CT involved. Or at least that's what they use for me. I think that's pretty standard. So again, it was very much kind of a surgery day for me. I was not expecting that. So that definitely ramped my nerves up once I showed up. It was kind of good I didn't know in a way. I think I shouldn't say it was kind of good I didn't know. I think I was just oblivious. And when I walked in, it actually caused me to have more anxiety the day of than that I needed to actually have. Actually, let me back up. Before I go into what to expect, I want to talk about tips and tricks. I talked this about this last time in episode 5 in the Venogram episode, which is do everything you can to exacerbate your symptoms. Because again, this test is based on a very subjective, and I will always preface it by saying subjective pain scale. So you want to go in and be as in as much pain as you can. I've heard people talk about how they had their renal hilar block scheduled and the day of they weren't in a flare. So what can you do? Cause yourself to be in a flare. What did I do? I woke up, I had sex that morning, I worked out the day before very lightly. Couldn't really do too much, but I walked more than usual. I took the dogs on a walk. Gosh, what else? I actually think I was on my period that day. It just worked out. But again, if you can schedule it around your menstruation cycle, when I say I think I was on my period, again, I had a hysterectomy, so it's kind of hard to track right now. So do all the things you can to exacerbate the symptoms so that you go in as much pain as possible. I hate to say that. I hate to be like, hurt yourself, like don't physically hurt yourself, but do things that are going to be painful, or things that you potentially currently avoid. To exacerbate that pain. Because when I went in, I was a 9'10". My left flank was screaming at me. So I was able to tell him that. He comes in and he's like, okay, this is what the procedure we're gonna do. What is your pain right now? And I said a 9'10". I also want to talk about the subjective nature of the pain scale. As some of you all are very aware, the 0 to 10 pain scale that they give is not for chronically ill people. So I learned in that space, and some of there's like an infographic kind of going around the internet. You could probably Google it and find it really quickly, which is that the 0 to 10 that they have in the hospital, that's not for chronically ill. You almost have to start at that like 3, 4, or 5 for us. So remember that when you're going in, because when I say a 9, 10, I'm actually like a 14, 15, right? So you kind of have to learn to talk the lingo. Also some things with insurance is like, if you walk in and you're like, I'm a 1 today, right? On a normal person's pain scale, not a chronically ill person's pain scale, then they're going to be like, insurance is going to read that and be like, then why are you here? You don't need this procedure. So there's some things like that just to keep in mind, some tips and tricks that that we ourselves have a different pain scale we need to work off of, and we have to transpose that onto the normal pain scale so that doctors can fully understand. We've also been living with this pain for so long that our brain has done a nice little number of protection on us to fake us into thinking our pain isn't as bad as it is. And I'm telling you right now, now that I'm post-op kidney auto transplant and I'm actually not in pain anymore, I was often downplaying my pain. I wish I would have gone in like the days that I said I was a 5'6". I honestly wish I would have said 7'8", 9". But again, that's a whole nother topic. So what to expect? You walk in very much like a surgery day. They'll bring you back pre-op. You'll have a nurse ask you some questions. What are your allergies? They will put a not a PICC line. Why am I? They'll do an IV in you. So because they are, you can also request. So the IV for me was for the fentanyl and the Versed that they gave prior. I'm glad they did that because you definitely feel them inserting the anesthetic. I will say this, if I didn't have the Versed or the fentanyl, I don't think it would have hurt that incredibly bad. So I think if you go in and don't do that, some people choose not to use the fentanyl and Versed because you have to realize that that is going to influence that pain scale number. So I asked the doctor, I said, when does the local anesthetic fentanyl and Versed go away, and when does it wear off? And they told me about give about 4 hours. So I was like, okay, cool, that's really good for me to know, because 4 hours after they do the injection on my pain scale, that'll really be the starting point. So I made sure to communicate that with people, that okay, like I went from a 9-10 prior to after that I was a zero. For about for about 5 hours. And then I started dancing around the one, two, three. I think I reported a four for like the next 24 hours. And the most notable thing that happened for me is when I woke up the next morning, I was not woken up by left flank pain. That to me, that one solitary moment was truly when I was like, this was a positive result. So they'll come, you're going back to pre-op, you get prepped pre-op, and then somebody will come in and they'll bring you back to the CT room. Very standard, like you're having a CT. The difference with this particular CT is they'll bring you back. Before they put you on the bed, they will give you, if you do choose to have the fentanyl and Versed, they'll put that, give you that nice little cocktail, send you on a fun little I don't give a shit adventure. And it truly was. I loved it because I felt them do the local anesthetic. I felt them do the poke, but I had no pain recollection of it. Like there was no, I was just like, oh, that's really interesting. That was an interesting sensation. No flinch, no anything. Once they gave me that, actually, I think they transported me to the bed first. So they had me facing down. So usually for a CT, they'll have you facing supine position on your back, facing up, or at least that's how all mine have been. For this, they had me supine, but I was facing down. Then they gave me the Versed. That's actually exactly how it happened. It's coming back to me now. Then they gave me the Versed. Felt great. Nice little warm hug. Anti-anxiety, love that stuff. And then I remember them doing, they said, okay, we need to calibrate really quick. So what they were doing is the CT started whirling up and they were just finding where my renal hilar block was. So I remember they placed this thing, kind of this large thing on my back, and it was almost like a, what I could imagine was almost like a ruler in a way. And then what they did is they would come and they would do this little mark kind of on the ruler, where they made a mark on my back to be like, this is exactly where we need to put the local anesthetic. So it's a CT guided procedure. They put the local anesthetic in, bing, bang, boom, we were pretty good. The procedure was over. I mean, it was a poke and we were done. Went back onto my hospital bed. They took me to the post-op area, where I had to wait for an hour just to make sure I didn't throw up or any of those kind of classic things. I don't remember if they told me they needed me to wait for me to pee. I don't remember that aspect, but a lot of times surgeries, they will. They're like, we just need to make sure you're going to pee. With that being said, the surgeon came back in, asked what my pain was. I was like, I'm great. I'm a zero. So he reported that. That was on the scan, that he wrote up about me, which was good. That's what insurance gets. I will say this, they didn't leave me. The post-op nurse was like, or I think the surgeon came in and I was like, so we have to stay for an hour. And he's like, no, you can actually just go. So we were able to get discharged a little bit sooner. That's not to say that that might be your case, but just know that there was like a waiting period where we had to wait around. We were able to be discharged and went on our way. I would say the entire experience was about 4 hours long because you know how it goes. It's like arrived at the hospital 2 hours prior to your surgery to get prepped. The procedure itself was the shortest. It was like 15 minutes long. I think I was maybe back in the CT room for about 30 minutes. Some of it was me just waiting mostly, but once things got going, it was in and out. And then the waiting in the post-op. So around the 4 hour mark, I think we arrived around 8 a.m., got back to our cabin around 12, a little bit after 12. So that's what to expect. I would say very low key experience. The thing to keep in mind though is that 24 hour pain log, bringing back into the conversation of our chronically ill pain scale. So transposing that, right? Like we're starting on a 3, 4, 5 for the normal pain scale. So transposing the chronically ill pain scale onto the normal pain scale, has really helped. That helped me a lot in my journey to being taken, like people take me seriously. Because if I go in and I'm like, I'm a 0-1 today, they're kind of like, why are you here? There were some days that I felt like I was a 0-1, but I still was like, you know, like I'm not necessarily in a flare today, but I'm still about a 4-5. So just keep that in mind. The goal, hopefully. I shouldn't say the goal. The goal with this renal hyalur block is to just see if the kidney is what is at play here. I've known some people get the renal hyalur block done and they have what is, you know, quote unquote, a negative result, meaning that it didn't alleviate the pain. For some, it actually exacerbated the pain. Now, I don't want to say. Obviously, I started out talking about how annoyed kind of the subjective nature of the renal hyalur block is. I don't want this to be chalked up into, I think the renal hyalur block is stupid, and nobody should do it. I think there is great data to be gleaned from the renal hyalur block. It gave me more confidence going into my auto transplant because, again, I'm not just trying to get a transplant. I truly want to know this is something that I need. For the people that have negative experiences, I do know that they've gone on to have maybe they hadn't investigated endometriosis, for example. So they went and got scheduled for that surgery, found out they had endometriosis or not. Some of them found out they had endometriosis on their ureter. So that could have been some of the cause for the bladder issues, for the urology style issues. That doesn't necessarily mean Nutcracker is out of the question. But who knows, maybe when they went in and poked those nerves and blood vessels that are on the renal hilum, maybe that was like poking the bear and the endo just flared up. Who knows, right? Like, I'm not a doctor, but it's nice because the renal hilar block does kind of give you a smidge of a glimpse. You know, as a reminder, I had my hysterectomy, my stage four endo excision, and the loss of my left ovary prior to Nutcracker, prior to Mathurner. So once I got to the vascular compression space, I had already kind of left no stone unturned in these other systems. So I was pretty dang sure it was vascular related. So that's the nice thing about the renal hyalur block is it'll give you a glimpse into, is there other things that should be addressed? Is there not? With that being said, it's really frustrating because if you're having classic Nutcracker symptoms and maybe you have a negative renal hyalur block result, and that could be because maybe the local anesthetic wasn't placed in the right spot. Who knows? It could be how the renal hyalur block interacts with people who have EDS and your specific symptoms present differently than somebody else's. Again, I'm not a doctor, I'm not a medical doctor, so I'm not sure, but the renal hyalur block to me is interesting. Another thing I find interesting is some of the research I've read about why the renal hyalur block should be used in diagnostic, meaning if you don't have a positive test, you shouldn't be accepted to do a kidney auto transplant. If you go in and look at the people who are requiring the renal hyalur block, they're the same people that are conducting the research that is sponsored by the university hospital that they are working at. So there is definitely some stuff going on there with, well, we want to prove that we are correct about requiring the renal hyalur block and that it has to be a positive test to be accepted. So these are just some ramblings that I'm having. Again, don't crucify me here. As I said in the introduction, these are my lived experiences, my thoughts on the matter. you start to kind of be like, oh, okay, they're requiring this. And this research is being conducted at the university hospital that they're at. So you can't tell me that there's not some level of bias there that is pushing the data. Interesting, right? So that's something that I get really annoyed with the Riedl-Hilar block is I'm like, if you are saying that this test needs to be a requirement to be accepted, and I have to have a positive test, but the entire thing is built off the back of a subjective test. I mean, anybody in a research space to me would be like, where is the validity and reliability in this? You're also asking chronically ill people who are constantly being gaslit, thus they turn to starting to gaslight themselves, who are in a system of chronic pain, and they are trying to be there. You're gaslighting yourself. You're like, is this all in my head? So what do? You often downplay your pain. So what does that mean for a 24-hour pain scale register? So you're downplaying your pain, you're overthinking it. I mean, I knew I was doing that during the time because I was like, is this a positive test? I don't know. I even nervously remember saying, this feels like a positive test. When I submitted my, like, this is me going back to my academic self. When I submitted my exam, if you will, my results, I really felt like they were going to be like, this isn't true. Like somebody was going to like, which it was, but it just, you're gaslighting yourself constantly to be like, well, is this enough? I don't know. Is it actually a four or is it a five? I don't know. Actually, maybe it's a three. I can feel some of you like shaking your head up and down because we're constantly doing that. Like when I went in, when my pain gets really, really bad, I become very stoic. So I don't often like cry and wail like some people expect somebody to do if they come in and say, I'm a 9-10 on the pain scale. I actually get more stoic, and I don't know if that's because of my education background and me realizing that, oh, things are hard. Like I have the psychology background, so I understand, like, for me personally, wailing and doing all that stuff makes the pain worse. That's not saying that's your lived experience. So I get more stoic. I become more almost, I outwardly look more emotionally stable. Internally, it's a shit show. Absolute shit show. Major clusterfuck. So when I go in and tell somebody I'm a 9-10, the look on their faces every time is like, you're just lying and you're here for the drugs. Absolutely not. So again, that's just my little thing about the Riedl-Hilar block that annoys me a lot is I don't believe, I don't know. I wish there was a better way we could capture the results of that because to some extent, I wonder how many of you out there have had a quote unquote negative Riedl-Hilar block and how much you might have been downplaying your pain to then represent for them to come back and be like, well, you didn't have a 50% positive result. When you were over here gaslighting yourself and maybe minimizing things, when in reality you did. So that's just a little something, something for you to chew on. You don't have to chew on it. You can spit it out. You can turn this episode off. You can just completely decide not to eat it. Whatever, right? Like you have autonomy. You have your right to take what I have provided you and do with it what you will. So this is the Riedl-Hilar block episode. I hope that has brought you some insights on what to expect, what the Riedl-Hilar block is, how you why the Riedl-Hilar block is used, who can refer you, and then what to expect on the day. So before you go, as always, I do want to invite you. I'm gonna need this right now. I can feel myself being a little like wound up talking about this Riedl-Hilar block and the reliability, validity of this test based on a subjective measure. I'm gonna Nice deep breath. So I want to invite you to do that with me. Just deep breath through your nose. And then slowly exhale. And then another deep inhale. And then slowly exhale, grounding yourself more into this moment, more into reality. More into the realness of your space, even if that means pain is present, giving it a nice little hug, telling you that I'm here for you, I'm advocating for you. And just keep with this inhale, exhale flow at your own pace for as long as you need. as you transition into maybe listening to the next episode or just going about your day, whatever is next for you, do not forget to take a moment to thank yourself for showing up for yourself. It often goes unnoticed, but I'm here to say that I notice you.